support. And I'd also like to send a shout out to our brothers and sisters on the inside, especially those on death row. I'd like to give thanks to Creator, to the indigenous peoples whose lands we occupy, to ancestors, and to those yet to come. Blessings.
Hey, Fresno, what time is it?
It's time to Stir It Up!
Welcome to Stir It Up, a weekly program produced by a collective of local activists, organizations in Fresno. Please join us as we educate, agitate, and pontificate.
Stir It Up! Well, hello, everybody. This is Jerry Bill. I'm going to be your host today for the second Wednesday of the month, Fresno Center for Nonviolence edition of Stir It Up. And we have two guests for you today. One is Noel Dowdian. Is that how you say it, Noel?
That's right.
And Jason Eck. They're both from the Victim Offenders Reconciliation Program here in Fresno. And they're going to explain what the program is. And also, but first, I'm going to ask them to explain, you know, just say something about their positions with VORP and how they got involved with VORP, just by way of introduction. So, Noel, would you like to go first?
Sure. And thank you very much for having us. I'm Noel Dowdian. I'm the director of VORP. And I originally got involved through the Center for Peacemaking and Conflict Studies at Fresno Pacific University as a volunteer mediator. And I began working at VORP as the case manager and then became the director. So I've been around for 3 years now.
Okay. Thank you. And Jason?
Again, also I'd like to say thank you very much for having us. I got also involved through the Center for Peacemaking and Conflict Studies. I was a student at Fresno Pacific, and I started off as a graduate student working with the Center for Peacemaking, and then through a grant from the California Endowment, they hired me full-time to work on the pilot project that we'll be starting, that we'll be talking about later. And this pilot project is directly connected to VORP, and I've been working on it for about 3 years with VORP.
Okay, and I'll announce it a little later in the program. After we take a break, we will be taking phone calls. So if you want to, if you think of some questions for Noel or Jason, we'll be giving you the opportunity to phone those in a few minutes. Okay, we wanted to start with just a description of what VORP is, because a lot of people don't know. So Noel, would you like to take a stab at that?
Sure. Well, our program began back in 1982. We are a faith and community-based program, and our mission is to assist the church and community in bringing reconciliation and healing between victims and offenders of crime. So basically what we do is we are partnered with the juvenile probation as well as the courts, and they make referrals to us. And once the referral is made to our program, we assign it out to a volunteer mediator, and then the volunteer mediator will contact both the offender and the victim and see if they'd be interested in meeting together to work things out to make things as right as possible between them. And once they've both agreed voluntarily to participate, then we mediate between the victim and offender and we talk about what happened. So the offender actually shares, you know, what they did and maybe what they were thinking when it happened. And then the victim gets to share how it affected them, how it affected their family, maybe their neighborhood, depending on what the crime was. And then once we talked about what happened, we talk about how to make things as right as possible between them at that point. So that may involve some sort of monetary restitution or community service or a letter of apology. And then once we talk about how to make things right at that point, then we talk about the future. And how do we prevent this from happening again? Because it's great if the offender says, I'm sorry, and I'm going to pay you back for what you did, but then they go and do the same thing, they're kind of missing the point. So we want to make sure that we're looking at kind of the bigger picture of what's happening and why the offender did what they did.
And let me just ask you this. Do you ever have trouble getting either victims or offenders to participate? Are they reluctant?
Yeah, you know, every now and then people are reluctant. Usually offenders are reluctant because they're afraid of the victim. They're afraid they're going to get yelled at, which I thought was pretty funny when I first started working because I thought to myself, well, aren't you the offender? Shouldn't the victim be afraid of you? But in reality, they were afraid of the victim. And then for the victim, obviously, sometimes there's fear of retaliation or fear of, you know, who the other person is. Not a lot of times the victim doesn't know the offender, and so they're just not quite sure who would be meeting on the other side of the table. So
right. Okay, and then Jason, you mentioned the pilot project. Would you be willing to explain that to our listeners?
Well, Noelle described a little bit about what VORP is doing, and pretty much what we're doing with the pilot project is trying to move from a personality-based referral where it's pretty much, because right now what it is where we get a lot of cases that are referred from different people in the system who just like our program. But we figure that if this is something that works, if this is something that people like, then why don't we actually try to embed it actually in the system? And so what we're trying to do with the pilot project is actually see how can we actually embed it into the system, looking at trying to actually tackle that process. So what we actually did is there was about 2 years of planning, working with various people in the justice system, our presiding juvenile judge, the district attorney's office, public defender, probation, other community organizations, to try to figure out, okay, how is this going to work? And then also trying to think procedurally, the day-to-day, how would something like this work if we were trying to make it in the system? And after about a year and a half, 2 years of planning, we came up with a pilot project where there was an eligibility of cases that was determined. And if these cases met the eligibility criteria, when the case comes to the judge at arraignment, the arraignment is when they plead guilty or not guilty. And if they plead guilty and they meet this eligibility criteria, then they would be sent to our program. And then in our program, we would have anywhere from 6 to 7 weeks to come up with an agreement between the victim and the offender. And then that agreement was sent back to the judge as their sentence. And then the judge would look it over, make sure it's nothing too crazy, and then that would become their sentence. So with this pilot project, it's a significant amount of cases, and that's kind of one thing that we're working on now is trying to help develop capacity and make sure that we have the mediators to take care of all of these cases.
So how well is this being received by the people in positions of power, you know, the courts and the DAs and all of those people?
I would say that it's being received well. I think there's definitely some hesitancy in the beginning on not necessarily whether it was going to work, but can you actually do it? You know, we all know this is kind of a good idea, but can you actually handle the capacity? Can you handle, you know, the amount of cases? Will things be on time? And are you really going to be able to deliver? And I think that many people have been pleasantly surprised that things have worked. We have several people who have come up to us in the system, whether it's probation officers or whether it was a judge. I'm just saying, you know, just on how great it things have turned out with certain cases, where they would tell us about victims who feel like they've been, you know, that they're getting paid back. They feel better. There's offenders that they know that are getting the help that they need because of programs like this. So I think that they've been pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. And another thing is that since we're working with the court system, we meet with the presiding juvenile judge, the head of the district attorney's office for juveniles, head of the public defenders, and director of juvenile probation. And so we meet with them on an ongoing basis. And so we want to make sure that we're on top of everything that's going on at the courthouse. So in case there's something that comes up, we're aware of it and we can work on it. And like Jason said, I just met with them all on Friday and they all had positive things to say. So,
well, it sounds like it's going well. Yeah. I'd like to know, when you mentioned a sentence, you work out a sentence and it gets presented to the judge. What can you give us some examples of what a sentence might be that you would work out?
Well, if we would take probably a normal case that we would have, you'd take, say, for example, a graffiti case. You'd have a juvenile offender who would tag pretty much tag up like a business or somebody's home. What we would do is we would get that offender, their family members, and then the owner of the business or whoever's home was tagged, and have them meet. And along with their support people, and then try to come up with some type of an agreement. And those agreements or the sentence that would that generally come up from those things is a lot of times restitution, community service. But what we're trying to do is go beyond just simply having somebody order them restitution and just say, you owe $1,000. But I'm trying to get to the point where it's like, okay, well, you're going to owe $1,000. That's how much the damage was. And then if they say, well, I can't pay it, well, then you try to then find out, okay, well, then how can we make it so that you can pay that back? Do we need to try to figure out a job situation? Could we figure out a payment plan? And it's not just – and also same thing with community service. We don't just want to randomly throw community service at them, but try to make something that actually fits the crime that happened. Actually, I believe, Noelle, I think you did a case with involving a pet store, correct?
Right. Yeah, I did a case where some kids broke into – two kids broke into a pet store, and not only did they cause damage to the pet store, but they also killed some of the pets. Oh. And one of the things was that the victim was particularly concerned about is that the kids didn't seem to see the difference between killing a pet and causing damage. And so instead of them paying him back for the damage caused, he converted that amount into hours worked and had them volunteer at an animal shelter to help create some empathy for animals. Oh, and so that was a unique way that, you know, they could use those community service hours to also hopefully better the youth as well.
Okay. Case studies are helpful to our listeners, I think. So are there any more examples you'd like to give us of cases you guys have handled or know about?
Well, another one that I think was particularly interesting was some kids graffitied a train car.
Uh-huh.
And so it was one of the larger train companies was the victim. And anyways, they had the president of the company come from Sacramento to meet with the boys. And anyways, one of the things that the president wanted to convey to the boys was that not only, you know, of course it's wrong to graffiti the train cars, but also it's very dangerous because a lot of kids have lost limbs and even have died while graffitiing a train car, and then the train starts moving and then they get, you know, either tucked underneath and then the train goes over them or something like that. So the agreement was that the boys were going to pay back the company for the damage done, and then also do a public awareness training for different schools in the area to let other kids know the dangers of graffitiing train cars.
I know of another case where there was a juvenile who graffitied an elderly woman's house, and I think it was close to $1,000 worth of damage, and pretty much so what he needed to do was kind of go back and clean it, kind of paint it over and do that stuff. But part of what we're also looking at is not just, is asking the question, okay, well, what needs to be done to make this right? And also, so what do we need to do so this doesn't happen again? And when we ask those questions, you're not just looking at the needs of the victim, but sometimes also the needs of the offender. And it came up actually in the meeting, in this mediation, that the offender was having problems in school. And so what the elderly woman said was that, well, she could tutor him. And so she ended up tutoring him, but not just that. She actually had her group of she had like a small group at church of elderly women who decided to get around this kid and actually help tutor him. So moving from – and that's in a sense emblematic of what we're trying to do, moving from before where she was afraid in her town – I mean in her neighborhood because, you know, is this kid going to come back? Or are they purposefully targeting me, to looking at this kid and being like, do you know what? I can actually help this person and try to help them become a productive citizen in society.
Wow, interesting. So you've talked about graffiti and like breaking into the pet store. Can you give me an idea of the range of crimes that you end up dealing with?
Right now we're doing primarily more lower-level crimes. So we get anything from, like you said, graffiti, vandalism, burglary. We get assault, battery, a lot of, like, school fights or things like that. Mm-hmm. I think that's primarily the types of cases that we're handling right now. However, we are open to more severe crime. I know a lot of some other programs around the country only deal with severe crime. So you kind of get the wide range of offenses.
Okay, thank you. And tell me something about your mediators. Who are they?
Well, our mediators come from all around the community. We get students. We get a lot of people from Fresno State, Fresno Pacific University, as well as Fresno City College. And then we also get, people from churches. We have a lot of church members who are interested in volunteering. We get people from other organizations who are just interested in making a difference in their community. Pretty much we're willing to work with anybody as long as they're willing to work with our clients. So,
well, maybe when we come back from the break, you could tell people how they could become trained as a mediator.
Definitely.
Yeah. We should take a short break and have a calendar because we try to do that on the Stir It Up show every time. So right now I'm talking with Noel Daoudian and Jason Eck from Victim Offenders Reconciliation Program. And we'll be back with them in just a couple of minutes. And also we'll take your phone calls at that time. And the phone number here is area code 559-266-8888. So if you want to ask a question, go ahead and call that number. And I'll announce it again after the break. But let's go to the calendar.
Welcome to the KFCF Community Calendar. Friday, February 12th, the Relay Peace Center presents speaker Sharok Hijazin, an exchange worker from Jordan, on the topic of the Hashemite Kingdom of Jordan. The event takes place at the Fellowship Hall, First Mennonite Church, 1208 L Street in Reedley. The free program begins at 7 p.m. Call 638-3091. Saturday, February 13th, the Central Valley Progressive PAC meeting will feature candidates for the Fresno City Council from 3:30 until 5 p.m. at the Fresno Center for Nonviolence, 1584 North Van Ness Avenue in Fresno. Go to cvppac.org or call 435-7360. To list your event on our calendar, contact us at least 2 weeks in advance. Email calendar at kfcf.org. Welcome to the KFCF Community Calendar. Wednesday, February 10th, the Fresno Center for Nonviolence presents Forgiveness. The film shows a psychological and philosophical approach to forgiveness, as told through four powerful stories. The event takes place at 12 noon and 7 p.m., 1584 North Van Ness at McKinley. This event is wheelchair accessible. Friday, February 12th, Fresno Filmworks presents The Messenger with Ben Foster, Woody Harrelson, Samantha Morton, and Jenna Malone. This film will be screened at the Tower Theater, 815 East Olive Avenue in Fresno, at 5:30 and 8:15 p.m., $10 general, or $8 for students and seniors. Go to fresnofilmworks.org. To list your event on our calendar, contact us at least 2 weeks in advance. Email calendar at kfcf.org.
Okay, welcome back to Stir It Up, second Wednesday of the month. Fresno Center for Nonviolence is hosting this. I'm Jerry Bill, your host for today, and in the control room we have Mike Rhodes. Thank you, Mike. And in the studio with me, I have Noel Daoudian and Jason Eck from the Victim Offenders Reconciliation Program. If you were listening to the calendar we just played, you know that we have a film tonight at 7 o'clock at the Fresno Center for Nonviolence, 1584 North Van Ness. And Noel is going to be there to talk to the group after the film. The film deals with the topic of forgiveness, and the film lasts 28 minutes, and then we'll have a discussion time after that. So that's 1584 North Van Ness. The film's at 7. If you come at 6:30, there's a little food there for you. It's a potluck. You can bring some food. Okay, so hope to see some of you there to learn more about this. But Noel, Jason, how could our listeners learn more about VORP, and how could they get involved if they're interested?
Yeah, well, we have all of our mediators for our program are volunteer. So we do offer a 10-hour mediator training. It's usually a Friday night and a Saturday day training. It's for anybody who's interested. Even if you're not absolutely sure that this program is someplace you want to volunteer, it's great training just for basic conflict management skills. The next ones coming up are February 19th and 20th, as well as March 5th and 6th, and all of the trainings are held at Fresno Pacific University. And you can call our office for more information or to make a reservation. Our number is area code 559-455-9803. So, and the other options you have for volunteering at our program, we do offer internships for students, as well as we do partner with churches who are interested.
Okay. Let me remind listeners that you can call in and ask questions of our guests if you'd like. And our phone number here is area 559-266-8888. Okay. And you guys said you had another case study you wanted to share with us about a bar break-in?
Yeah. towards the beginning of our pilot project that we had mentioned at the beginning of the program, we received a case from one of the little outlying communities here in Fresno County where 10 boys had broken into a bar four times over 3 weeks. And each time they caused some damage as well as stole the alcohol. And anyways, the police ended up catching them because of some footprints that led from the bar to a shed in the back. And four of the boys were in the back shed, pretty intoxicated with all the alcohol around them. So it was pretty easy for them to catch them. But anyways, all these 10 boys were referred to our program. I met with all of them, and I got some confirmation from them as well as their parents that they would like to participate. I met with the bar owner, who was very interested in participating, as well as some of the community members around there. Since it was a smaller community, it really affected everybody. And so we ended up doing a mediation with all 10 boys and the victim, as well as some community members. So in total, there's about 30 people present. And the final agreement was that the boys were going to split the amount of restitution. It was about $4,000. So each of them had to pay about $400. And they all wrote letters of apology to the victim, and they all agreed to do community service based on how many times they were involved in the break-in. And I actually brought the apology letter with me just so you kind of get a taste as to what it sounds like from the offender's perspective. So, Jason, if you would like to read it.
Okay, and before I start, I'm actually obviously I've changed the names so that as we can't really use their real names, but here's one of the apology letters from one of the juveniles. Dear Bill, I'm writing you this letter because I wanted to apologize for what I did to your bar. I'm also writing this letter because I wanted to tell you in detail what I was actually involved in at your bar. Hopefully after reading this letter, you will forgive me for what I did. The first time we broke into the bar started off at the park when my friends and I were just chilling with nothing to do. Then we decided to go check out the bar and figure out a way to break into it. So we went to my house to get a crowbar and came back. I took off the security bars and went through the window. I was the first one to go into the window. I was pretty scared when I went in there. I didn't really know what to do, but when I noticed the bar and quickly jumped over it and seen the bottles, I grabbed a few bottles and gave them to my brother who was waiting outside, and then I went back to get some more. When I went back to get more bottles, as I leaned over to more bottles, I hit my head on the cash register as I was going up and noticed some change was in there. I started grabbing some of it and putting it in my pocket and then ran out the window and went home. As I was going home, I was pretty scared and nervous at the same time because I didn't really know where I was going to put all the bottles we had taken, but then I noticed our shed in the backyard and decided to put them there. The next time I was involved started off with me and my friends drinking some of the bottles. Then out of nowhere, one of my friends suggested that we go take a look at the bar again and see if we could get into it one more time. My brother opened the window again, and I was the second to go inside. The first thing I did this time was to go to the refrigerators and look for some food. I ended up finding some chips and corn nuts that were in the back of the bar. I then handed all of the food to my friends who were waiting for me. After that, we all just went home. The day we turned ourselves in, I was scared and embarrassed because people were passing by my house and seeing me handcuffed. sitting down on my curb, talking to a cop. When the cops took us away, I started thinking about my future and how it was going to turn out. I was also thinking about my family, mainly my mom, because of all the things she has done for me. I know the last thing she wants to see is her son in the backseat of a cop car getting taken away. The thing I think will be helpful and make things better is to pay for all the damage and stolen property at the bar. Also, an apology is a main thing, and I think would make this whole situation better, because I know we caused the bar owner and the bar both a lot of problems. As for my future, I plan to make some changes in my life, starting off with my attitude, because I really need to straighten up and stop getting into so much trouble. Also, I want to be a better football player and be a leader on my team, and in order for me to be that, I need to show my teammates and coaches that I'm a good person on and off the field. Now, the last thing is that I wanted to apologize for all the harmful things I did to your bar. I'm sorry for what I did, and I promise that it will never happen again. This whole thing has really taught me a lot of things and showed me that I need to become a better person. Once again, I'm truly sorry for all the problems I caused you and your bar, and it won't happen again. Respectfully, the gentleman.
Oh, okay. Thank you for sharing that, Jason. That gives us a little bit of insight into how that works. Now, I noticed the writer of the letter mentioned his mother, and I guess you involve families in these mediation sessions. Is that, do you think that's a major part of what makes this work, is the parents or grandparents or whoever are involved?
Yes, I think that is definitely, that is one of the key things, is to try to empower the parents to just be involved in these things, to be involved in deciding, okay, what is going to happen. Because then hopefully, sometimes, you know, the parents are also sometimes the people who need help, and we can give them the opportunity to actually, you know, talk about those types of needs that they might have and see if we can help them with certain things. But, you know, justice is not defined by people who have law degrees and who have big titles, but it's the community. It's the community that has the right to help define what justice is. And I think that's what we're trying to do, is actually involve the community in this process of deciding what should be done for our youth. And so definitely involvement of community, involvement of family is essential for our program.
Now, what evidence do you guys have that all of this works? Or how does it compare to the traditional criminal justice system?
Well, a study was done by the California State Administrative Office of the Courts back in May 2000. And what they did is they looked at cases that go through the traditional criminal justice system and cases that go through a restorative justice program such as ours. And they looked at five different programs in California. And what they look for is the recidivism rate, or the reoffense rate, the satisfaction rate for participants, as well as the amount of restitution collected and community service served. And what they found is that in cases that go through our program, the traditional recidivism rate is about 80% for juvenile offenders. When they go through our program or a similar program, it drops to about 30%. So it's not...
That's a big drop.
Yeah, so it is a large drop. It's not perfect yet, but it definitely is a very large drop. And the other thing they found is that people who go through our program and make agreements to pay back restitution, the collection rate was pretty astronomical, ranged from 100 to 1,000% more restitution collected than the traditional criminal justice system. And, you know, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that when people voluntarily choose to pay somebody, they're more likely to follow through than if somebody commands them to.
Right, right.
And the other thing they found is that kids who go through the program, as well as victims, the satisfaction ran about above 90% for both parties. So everybody was satisfied with the process.
That's pretty amazing. You don't often get 90% satisfaction rate in anything.
Right.
That's terrific. That is terrific. Yeah. Would you like to give out contact information again so that any listeners out there that want to know more can hear about it or learn about it?
Sure, yes. You can either call our office, area code 559-455-9803, or you can check out our website at vorp.org. And also, you can check us out on Facebook as well. VORP, I think it's facebook.com/FresnoVORP. or Vorp Fresno. Yeah, I can't remember.
Just search for Vorp and it'll be right there. Yeah. If you also want to contact me and to know more about our pilot project and get involved in that, or if you have any questions about that, my number is 453. I'm sorry, area code 559-453-3488.
Okay, very good. Now, I want to remind the listeners again that we have a film this evening at the Fresno Center for Nonviolence that deals with this topic, and Noel will be there to speak after the film and can answer people's questions at that time. So, and also, I presume you'll have some literature about the program.
Definitely.
So if you would like to know more about this, our film is at 7 o'clock tonight, and it's at the Fresno Center for Nonviolence, which is 1584 North Van Ness. Okay, so I want to thank both of you for coming in. I've been a longtime fan of VORP, and I see that the program is going pretty well in here in Fresno. And it's I heard Jason say it's bigger than a lot of the VORPs or similar programs in some other cities. Is that right?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And was VORP, the Fresno VORP, among the first in
Fresno VORP was the first in California and second in the nation.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So you got it.
You guys are celebrities. Okay, well, for the Fresno Center for Nonviolence, I want to thank you all for tuning in. And this is the Stir It Up program, second Wednesday of the month. And we're here every second Wednesday of the month from 3 to 3:30. And thanks to our engineer, Mike Rhodes. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. Thank you.
This is Free Speech Radio News for Wednesday, February 10th, 2010. In New York, I'm Dorian Marina. Coming up on today's newscast, communities outside the Haitian capital still wait for aid. We'll hear from one community that has created an informal network to bring desperately needed help to survivors. Black leaders meet with President Obama. They're calling for specific programs to solve chronic unemployment for people of color.
We stressed our strong support for targeted efforts that would focus on areas of high unemployment.
And we'll go to the